You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tonight after 7, it's True Stories Told Live on Snap Judgment. This week, best-selling author Jamaica Kincaid is sent to live with her aunt after the birth of her little brother. And a problem gambler with a destructive streak tells himself he can beat the odds just one last time. Those stories and more tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, going to work and paying the bills are part of life. We pay for shelter, we pay for food and insurance and a lot of stuff in between. But a new study shows that more and more Americans are finding it difficult for their incomes to keep pace with their expenses.
The new study found that half of Americans surveyed said that their expenses are either equal to or greater than their income. And our next guest says this issue is more complicated than people either living beyond their means or needing to make more money.
Jennifer Tesher joins us now. She's the president and CEO of the Center for Financial Services Innovation, which conducted the survey. And the group's mission is to improve the financial health of Americans. Jennifer, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, let's go over this finding again. It's significant, takes a little bit to sink in, but it sounds like about half of Americans have finances where the expenses outstrip the income.
Yeah, I know. For those of us who are fortunate to have abundance, right, to have what we need to live comfortably, it can seem jarring that the statistic is that high, but it's very consistent with research that we've been doing for the last several years now that shows that on average about half of Americans are financially challenged in some way.
And so when you look at younger people, to point this out, the numbers get even worse, right?
That's right. Now, some of that is to be expected. Younger people are just beginning their work journey. They're just beginning to earn hopefully significant money, more than just the odd job here and there. But they are also facing far greater challenges than previous generations were, particularly as it relates to student debt. When we think about the student debt crisis, we tend to think about the sheer amount of debt owed and how that can keep someone from being in a position of, say, buying a home or taking advantage of other opportunities in the future. But we rarely stop to consider the impact that that has on someone's monthly cash flow and just how much of their monthly inflows are being taken up by student loan repayments or other debt payments.
And looking at, you know, the broad demographics again, one issue you look at is volatility, that there's not, it doesn't seem to be a steady pace for the income each month the same, but one month, you know, you might have a lot more, another month quite a bit less, and that can be hard for families to handle.
That's right. We found in our survey that 38% of those who spend more than their income also have volatile income. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, we all tend to think, oh, they must be overspending. And I'm sure that it's certainly true for some percentage of people. But there are many other factors causing those volatile incomes. Think about, for instance, real-time or just-in-time scheduling, where if you work in an hourly job, your employer every week may be adjusting the hours that you are going to get for work that week. And you just don't know in advance. That's a really big factor. Another is that people are often working now multiple jobs, and usually that second or third job may not be as reliable. We also have more folks who are generating income from the gig economy. And while the number of people who are generating the majority of their income from gig work is still relatively small as a percentage of the overall workforce, increasingly, people are trying to supplement their incomes with money from the gig economy, and that also makes for spotty and volatile incomes.
Right, there's been a lot of talk about what's been called the gig economy lately. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and how that might paint in this picture?
Sure. You know, the rise of what people call the gig economy or the 1099 economy really came out of the birth of companies like Airbnb and Uber. We used to call it the sharing economy. Jobs where you're not actually an employee, generally speaking, of the company, but you're a contract worker who is essentially filling orders, whether it's picking someone up in your car or giving them a place to sleep or shopping for and delivering their groceries. On the one hand, these kinds of jobs create tremendous flexibility for people, and a lot of people seem to like it. It also enables people to earn some extra money on the side. But increasingly, people are either choosing this work or are forced to take this kind of work really as their primary source of income. And I think it's anyone's guess how significant a part of the workforce this part of the economy will become. But the jury is definitely out on whether this is a net positive or a net negative to workers.
We're talking to Jennifer Tesher right now. She's the president and CEO of the Center for Financial Services Innovation. And they recently conducted a study looking at income and expenses for Americans, found that almost half of Americans had expenses that were greater than the amount of income that they were taking in each month. And Jennifer, your organization, your conclusion here is that it isn't that Americans need to kind of rein in the spending and be more disciplined. I mean, there, as you said, there's probably some of that, but you think there's something bigger, something structural going on.
I think that's right. You know, wages have been flat for decades now, a couple decades, while living expenses are steadily increasing. So think about healthcare, which is dominating the news these days, and just how much healthcare costs have grown in the last couple decades. Think about housing costs, and in particular, rental costs. People are spending ever-increasing shares of their income, 50, 60, 70% of their income, just on a place to sleep every night. That's not a nice-to-have. That's a must-have. And then there's the student debt issue that we talked about earlier and other kinds of debt payments. You know, right after the financial crisis and the Great Recession, we saw also a great deleveraging, if you will, a lot of folks either paying down their debt or filing for bankruptcy or having their debt forgiven. But in the last couple of years, we've started to see debt levels creep up again. And I think, unfortunately, in this country, people have been trying to solve an income problem with debt. And that never ends well.
How does this affect a family who may be trying to survive, keep their head afloat, or to move to a place maybe where they are more solvent and they can look at bigger goals when they have, say, a big bill come in, like a $2,000 medical bill, or they need a new car suddenly? How does that affect their financial stability?
That's a great question, and I think I really like you pointing out this issue of insolvency, because I think the issue is whether people are illiquid or insolvent, because those are quite different matters. And many of the people we're talking about, particularly those who face significant volatility in their incomes, are really just illiquid. They have a cash flow problem, but financial products and services that exist out there weren't really designed for people who are living close to the edge, right? Your checking account assumes that you have a cushion. These are folks who don't really have a cushion. And so when you don't have a cushion and that emergency comes up or that opportunity comes up, you end up having to either forego it or turn to debt products, which can be perfectly good if you can afford to repay them. But if you don't have a lot of cushion, you may end up taking out a loan with a much longer term or a higher interest rate in order to be able to afford the monthly payments. So you're going to end up paying more in interest costs over the course of time. It's really another form of inequality in a way. We tend to think about people's income or assets, but access to tools that help you manage your cash flow, particularly when you're cash strapped, is a real have-not kind of situation for Americans.
Do you think this reality, as depicted in the study and seen there in the lives of families, has been something that's been processed, for instance, by Washington and identified as a problem, or is it still something that we're struggling to put a finger on?
I kind of hoped that last year, in the run-up to the election and the result of the election itself, helped form a wake-up call to Washington about the real financial lives of Americans. It certainly reminded people that rural Americans in particular are challenged and really deserve attention. But unfortunately, I haven't seen much change. I haven't even seen a whole heck of a lot of new policy suggestions based on this idea of increasing volatility. And, you know, to be clear, this isn't just a poor person's problem. This is a problem that is across the board. The Brookings Institution found that over the last several decades, income volatility has increased 30%. So a lot of us are facing this issue. And just to put a finer point on it, my colleagues just published a book a couple of months ago called The Financial Diaries. And in that study, we followed 235 families for a year, and we documented every dollar that flowed in and out of their households and the decisions behind those flows. And the most important finding from that research was that, on average, families spend 5 months out of the year with income greater or less than the average of 25%. So for 5 months out of the year, people are either facing an income spike or an income dip of as much as 25%. So that's not just a little blip. That's a very significant swing in one's income, and it makes it very difficult to plan and to sort of engage in financial behaviors that are framed around the long term as opposed to how am I going to get through the week. You know, in this country, we tend to think about people's annual incomes or their average incomes, but no one lives on the average and no one lives in the year. They live day to day, week to week, and that's where people are getting caught.
Talking with Jennifer Tesher right now. She's the president and CEO of the Center for Financial Services Innovation. They recently conducted a study looking at income and expenses for Americans.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are you one of the many Americans having a difficult time with incomes and expenses? Do you experience this income volatility our guest was talking about? You make more 1 month, less the next month, and you may not know which the next month's going to be. What questions do you have about financial health in America? What are some of the roadblocks you see? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our conversation now about the financial health of Americans with Jennifer Tesher. She's the president and CEO of the Center for Financial Services Innovation. They recently conducted a study looking at income versus expenses, found that a majority of Americans are having a difficult time with their finances. They have more expenses than they have money.
Is that you? You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. What roadblocks are out there for you in maintaining financial health? Is it student loans for you? Is it living expenses? Is it unpredictable expenses that rise from week to week, month to month? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And let's go to our first caller. We've got Matt on the line in Milwaukee. Matt, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm an architect in Milwaukee, and I also earn side income as a real estate broker. My architect income doesn't vary week to week, but expenses do. Even though I make a salary, it's still hard to make ends meet. I'm the head of household, and my wife doesn't have a job. So the reason for the increase in prices is the Federal Reserve. The central bank has caused the dollar to decrease in value like 99% since it was started in 1913.
Matt, thank you for that call. And focusing on the first part of what Matt had to say, Jennifer, saying he's got a salary job, he's an architect, he's got another job. On top of that, as a real estate broker, and he says his expenses are ping-ponging around a bit, and that's a reality for a lot of people.
But I think he makes an excellent point there. It's not just that income is volatile, so are expenses. I think, again, personal finance historically has suggested to us that the vast majority of our expenses are fixed, and that the rest of it is where we have some control. But our financial diaries book and study that I described a few minutes ago suggests exactly what the caller did, that expenses are as volatile as income. And the problem is that when you have an income spike or dip, you don't know whether your expenses are also spiking or dipping, and often there's a mismatch between the two. Sometimes you're lucky enough to have an income spike just at the right time when you also have an expense that you didn't know was coming, but often it's the opposite, and so that's a real challenge.
Another thing Matt's call got at, I just want to talk about very quickly before we move on to our next caller, because we have a lot of folks waiting, but you know, he said he's an architect, and I think for a lot of people that's an occupation with a lot of prestige, and you don't imagine someone who's an architect having financial instability problems.
That's right. You know, one of the other challenges here is that money is such a taboo topic. This is not something that we're often comfortable talking about, and so we don't often realize that other people in our lives may be experiencing these problems. It might be a family member. It might be a colleague at work. It might be the person caring for your children, the receptionist in your office. It might be someone you're doing business with. And so it's one of the reasons why my organization earlier this week organized for the second year in a row Fin Health Matters Day. We feel like it's really important to have a national dialogue about money. We often talk about economic challenges, but we don't talk enough about financial challenges. And I think that one of the ways to relieve some of the stress is to know that there are other people out there facing the same issue.
Well, Matt, thank you for the call. And we go next to Megan in Appleton. Megan, hi.
Hi. I am so glad you guys are talking about this. My boyfriend and I just started having this conversation last night as we're kind of newly graduated. And he's making a lot more than I am, but I'm kind of that mid-tier range of paycheck. And I just kind of wanted to talk about how, you know, even being in a stable income, it is so hard when we have, you know, things to prepare for. When we have like a bill come up, like a doctor's bill or something, it's hard for us to kind of recuperate when we have like, oh my gosh, it's $200 plus on top of rent and, you know, just making livable groceries and stuff like that. And preparing myself to turn 26 and have kind of that, you know, insurance is coming my way and think, oh my gosh, this is going to be a fixed expense pretty soon. Can I live like this? When just right now, you know, a few $100 spike here and there is really causing some damage in our planning to, you know, get married or anything like that. It's really frustrating.
Megan, thank you so much for sharing all that. I really appreciate all of the thoughts you had there. And Jennifer, Megan gets at something there about how, you know, one month you have a bill and you're already kind of on a shoestring and you're supposed to be smart and put a little bit aside, but then that $200 medical bill comes up and there goes that, you know, $200 that you put aside last month, or maybe you start in the hole. How do people bounce back from stuff like that, like Megan?
Yeah, really appreciate you sharing, Megan, and good for you for at the age of 25 taking these issues so seriously and really starting to think about them. I definitely think that's half the battle. You know, I would never say that technology in and of itself can solve these problems, but I do think there are a growing number of technology tools, financial technology tools, that can make it easier for people to manage and optimize when and how they are paid, when and how they pay their bills, when and how they might find an opportunity to set aside some money. So as an example, you know, we all know we're supposed to save, right? But boy, how do we make that happen? It feels so difficult. Well, there's a company called Digit. It's an app, and you connect it to your checking account, and it uses an algorithm to regularly monitor your cash flow. And every day or two, it looks for small sums of money, tiny sums, really, that it could remove from your checking account and sweep into your savings account without it causing you a cash flow problem, without you even knowing about it. They have helped a tremendous number of consumers save well over $250 million in aggregate, $5 to $30 at a time. So it's a little bit like finding that loose change in the couch, but who wants to go to the bank to deposit it? So increasingly, tools like Digit can make it a little bit easier to set it and forget it, and to start building even just a little financial cushion, even just a couple of hundred dollars, can make a really big deal.
Megan, thanks a lot, and good luck to you. And Jennifer, in our last 30 seconds here, you said financial tools are not going to solve the problems. What will?
Well, I think that we need to have a policy conversation in this country. We need to deal with some of the structural challenges that I mentioned, both about wages and income, about the social safety net, about the cost of health care. We've got to get real about these issues because this isn't just a niche problem. This is the majority of Americans.
Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jennifer Tesher is the president and CEO of the Center for Financial Services Innovation, joining us today to talk about their group's new study finding that about half of Americans don't have enough income coming in to meet their expenses.
Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, we'll look at the perceived gap, sometimes conflict, between Wisconsin's biggest cities and the rest of the state, and how it could shape the upcoming governor's race.
A guest says partisan rancor may run deep, but there are still ways for Congress to come together to fight political violence.
And we'll check in on the biggest stories out of Wisconsin this week in our state news roundup. Plus, it's this week's edition of Food Friday.
That's all coming up tomorrow right here on Central Time.